Welcome to Audio Stages. I'm your host, Hal Linden. Tonight we're proud to present part one of Pride and Prejudice, the musical, by Lawrence Rush. Pride and Prejudice was adapted from Jane Austen's 1813 romantic novel of manners. So turn down your lights, close out the screens, and enjoy Pride and Prejudice.
It is a truth universally acknowledged that a single man in possession of a good fortune must be in want of a wife. So begins Pride and Prejudice, the musical, book, music, and lyrics by Lawrence Rush, episode the first. It is the year 1800, and we're in the south of England, the village of Longbourn, to be exact. Behold the modest and simply furnished home of Mr. and Mrs. Bennet and their five daughters. Jane, 22nd, the eldest and most beautiful, Elizabeth, Mary, Kitty, and Lydia. In their living room, Mr. Bennet, who enjoys and often requires hiding behind a newspaper, is doing just that. Mary is practicing on the pianoforte, sadly to no avail, Jane is quietly knitting, and Elizabeth is attempting to read a book. However, the running around and screeching giggles of the youngest sisters is making that quite impossible.
Can you not learn how to amuse yourselves without annoying others?
La, which dress should I wear for the Lucas's ball next week? Oh, I can hardly wait.
Oh, Mr. Bennet, have you heard? Netherfield is let at last. Mm. Do you not want to know who has taken it?
I am sure you will tell me, Mrs. Bennet, whether I want to know or not.
Lady Lucas says that it is taken by a young man of large fortune from the north. His name is Mr. Bingley, and he's single. Oh, what a fine thing for our girls.
How so?
You must know that I'm thinking of his marrying one of them.
Does he know this is why he has moved here?
He must know, and that is why you must visit him.
You and the girls may go. I'll send a few words by you to assure him of my consent to marrying whatever girl he chooses, though I must throw in a good word for my Lizzie.
Oh, you will do no such thing. Oh, how you take delight in vexing me. You have no compassion for my poor nerves.
I have a high respect for your nerves. They are my old friends.
Will Mr. Bingley be at the ball?
I believe he will.
Then Lady Lucas may introduce him.
I highly doubt it. She is desperate to find her daughter Charlotte a husband, though I think it is a complete waste of time. Charlotte's beauty is... well, she hasn't any.
Twice a year there is a ball, and they are always the same. We gossip and stand around until we are forced to dance with a pimply young boy who has nothing interesting whatsoever to say.
Well, you cannot be so picky at your advanced age. When your father and I die, there will be no one to care for you. And your cousin, Mr. Collins, will inherit this house, as none of you are boys. So I have no choice but to find you suitable husbands. Time is of the essence. No one will have you once you are 25.
Well, what are we to do then about Mr. Bingley?
Oh, I don't care anymore. None of you listen to me.
I'm sorry to hear that. If I had known that this morning, I would not have called on him.
What? Is it true? Oh, how good of you, my dear, and that you went this morning and never said a word about it till now. Oh, I can see but one of my daughters happily settled at Netherfield, and all the others equally well married. I shall have nothing to wish for.
Time to prepare. There's not a moment to lose. Each of my girls must look their best. Don't slouch so. Fix up your hair. Pick out your loveliest shoes. Bingley is bound to be impressed. You must walk like ladies, smile and curtsy every chance you get, and make sure you do not talk excessively.
That's the best advice you've given yet.
Mr. Bennet, color your lips and wear your prettiest hats, and soon you'll be dining on Morel's. Hark! I think I'm hearing wedding bells.
Mother, I do believe you are overreacting just a bit.
You all don't understand the importance of such an event. Seldom it is a man so noble of birth, single and nearly 23, comes here. So think of your future and how much you'll be worth. Oh, how my dear friends will envy me. You must not act silly. Mary, you must promise not to sing. Lizzie, you must keep your comments to yourself. And Jane, you are perfect as you are. Don't change a thing. Take a rich man and add a beautiful girl. Surely you all know what that spells. Hark, I think I'm hearing wedding bells. Now come with me, I want to pick out our dresses. I pray you haven't blossomed too much.
Father, about Mr. Bingley. Is he handsome?
Couldn't say.
Is he tall?
Average, really.
Does he like to dance with younger girls?
Or does he dance at all?
Is he slender?
More than I.
Lovely hair.
He has hair.
I prefer it straight.
No curly. No.
Oh, he's rich. What do we care? Is he lively and athletic? Did he climb the Pyrenees?
Yes, yes.
When he spoke, was it poetic? Dearest Lydia, my flower.
Pretty kitty dove.
Oh, please. Does he sparkle?
Does he sparkle?
Did he laugh?
Did he laugh?
Will his smile make us swoon? Did he act like a buffoon? What did he say?
Girls, leave your father in peace. Here. Is he handsome?
This is madness.
Is he tall?
Save me, Lord.
Were his furnishings expensive? Did he say he'd pay a call? Did he feed you?
No.
Offer tea?
Of course.
Oh, his manners then are civil.
Are you finished with your drivel?
Mr. Bennet.
Let me assure you all, you will find Mr. Bingley perfect in every way.
Oh, hear that, girls. Let's get that man.
Oh, he's
time to repair. There's not a moment to lose. Here is rose water for your face. Take care, who knows which one you may choose. You'll put the others in their place. You must all be charming. Mary, you won't catch a man with books. Show those men how well I've taught you all to dance. And soon you'll be hiring your own butlers, maids and cooks. Here is our chance to meet the creme de la creme. Soon we'll be saying our farewells. I think I'm hearing wait.
What?
I think I'm hearing yes.
Oh.
I'm sure I'm hearing well.
She's always
How did we end up with such relations?
They're only excited about the ball and our prospects.
Oh, dear Jane, always thinking the best of people. You must teach me how to do that.
And Mother is right. What will happen to us if we don't find ourselves well situated?
Is that all we are to strive for? To be well situated at any cost?
Choosing a man for his wealth or connection, selling my soul for a hilltop estate, living a life without love or affection. You may have it if you wish it. I can wait. Saying I do just because it's expected. Sharing a home with a man that I hate. Throwing away all the dreams I've collected. Others may dispose of their dreams. I can wait. I can wait for dinners in silence. Wishing for somewhere to hide. I won't be chained to a plan preordained. I've too much pride. Keeping the peace with a daily concession. Forcing a smile while I suffocate. Finding I'm nothing but some man's possession. He can have you if he wants you. I can wait.
But what of Mother? If you marry someone she does not approve of, she may never speak to you again.
Mother? Never speak? I hardly think it possible.
Let her plan, continue her scheming. I'll not agree to an ill-suited mate. I'm not content to be who I'm not meant to be. That will not be my fate. Give me a man who has wit and intelligence. Someone who'll treat me as equal, no less. Love that is pure, love that is strong. Anything else would be terribly wrong. Simple, perhaps. But great for that, I can wait.
It is a week later. Within a short walk from the Bennets' home sits the home of Sir William and Lady Lucas, where a ball is underway. The Lucas's home is certainly a step up from the Bennets, but it would hardly be considered lavish. The ballroom is simple and tasteful. The Bennets have just arrived. A string quartet plays. Some dance, while others stand and chat.
Now, girls, one of you better be snatched up by Mr. Bingley tonight.
Mr. Bingley! Miss Caroline Bingley! Mr. Darcy!
Mr. Bingley, welcome!
Thank you, Sir William. May I introduce my sister, Caroline, and my friend, Mr. Darcy?
Charmed.
Very glad to meet you both. Well, please enjoy yourselves. Ah, may I present my daughter, Charlotte. And my wife, Lady Lucas.
So glad you could come. What a lovely room you have here.
Miss Lucas, may I have the honor of the next dance?
I cannot believe he asked Charlotte Lucas for his first dance. Well, she was practically thrown at him. Oh, he is handsome, and his sister is terribly elegant. I just heard that Mr. Darcy is one of the richest men in the country. He is even more handsome than Mr. Bingley. Mary, smile.
They seem very pleasant.
Mr. Bingley looks pleasant enough, and he is rather handsome. But the others look terribly unhappy.
I suppose they are used to more elegant gatherings than this. His friend is rather handsome as well, don't you think?
I suppose, if a frowning, sour face is your sort of thing.
As the dance ends, Mrs. Bennet goes in for the kill.
Mr. Bingley, I am Mrs. Bennet. I believe you've met my husband.
Yes, ma'am. Is he here this evening?
No, he doesn't go in much for dancing.
These must be your daughters. I've heard much of their beauty and charm.
Oh, you have? Well, let me introduce them. This is Kitty Lydia Mary Lizzie, and this is my eldest and most beautiful daughter, Jane.
Mother!
What a pleasure it is to meet you all. I do not like to miss a single dance. Miss Jane, if I may have the honor.
Yes?
I knew he would pick Jane. Oh, what a lovely couple they make.
Smile, Darcy. It will all be over soon.
Not soon enough.
Bingley and Jane dance. When it's over, Bingley joins his friend.
Come, Darcy. I hate to see you standing about in this stupid manner. I must have you dance.
You know how I detest it unless I am acquainted with my partner. Your sister is occupied, and there is not another woman here whom it would not be a punishment to dance with.
Upon my honor, I never met so many pleasant girls in my life. And there are several of them uncommonly pretty.
You are dancing with the only handsome girl in the room.
She's the most beautiful creature I've ever beheld. But there is one of her sisters who is very pretty and, I dare say, very agreeable.
Oh, she's tolerable, but not handsome enough to tempt me. And I am in no humor to give consequence to young ladies who are slighted by other men.
Miss Eliza, why are you not dancing? Mr. Darcy, may I present Miss Elizabeth Bennet to you as a very desirable partner?
Indeed. I have not the least intention of dancing, especially with a man of such discerning taste. I beg you to excuse me.
Some dance while others gossip about what just occurred.
Oh, just look at my sweet Jane dancing with Mr. Bingley a second time!
Later that evening in Jane's room, Jane is readying herself for bed, sitting at a desk in front of a mirror and brushing her hair. Elizabeth sits on the bed near her.
You've hardly said a word tonight. You like this, Mr. Bingley?
I was flattered he asked me to dance a second time.
Because he could see you were five times as pretty as every other woman in the room.
Stop!
Well, he is surprisingly very agreeable, and I give you leave to like him. You've liked many a stupider person.
Lizzie! You were not terribly hurt by what his friend Mr. Darcy said, I hope.
Oh, not in the least. The man is arrogance personified. Anyway, I doubt I'll ever see him again. However, if you are going to be seeing more of Mr. Bingley... Mr. Bingley!
Enough!
No, it's not nearly enough. You think you are hiding your thoughts, but you forget that I know you better than anyone.
Well, he is handsome.
Yes, he is that. And...
and good-humoured. And, well, I never saw such happy manners.
And rich, don't forget.
Lizzie!
So which of his countless good qualities was the one that caught your fancy the most?
You'll think me silly.
No, I think you many things, but never silly.
It's not his wealth or how he dances, though he is lively and
his feet. I didn't swoon or count the glances, though I confess I found them sweet. It wasn't anything he said. He hardly spoke. No, it was something else instead. That woke my heart. The way he held my hand. So kind and gentle, so at ease, so strong and yet as light as air, as if silently saying, please. The way he held my hand, I felt my poor heart skip a beat, so safe within this stranger's care. That while dancing, I quite forgot my feet. Words can be misleading. Eyes don't always see. In one unexpected moment, his touch revealed his heart to me. That I could trust, and I felt that I could maybe even love him just from the way he held my hand.
Over the following week, news of the regiment's arrival in nearby Meryton reaches the Bennets to the delight of Lydia and Kitty. Bingley and Jane spend more time together. In fact, just yesterday, Mr. Bingley's sister invited Jane to dine at Netherfield. Mrs. Bennet sent her on horseback, knowing a storm was approaching and that they wouldn't have Jane ride back in the rain. However, today, a note arrived at the Bennet home with the news that Jane is not well and will be taken care of at Netherfield. Mrs. Bennet is delighted. Elizabeth goes to visit her at Netherfield, a magnificent Palladian mansion surrounded by 400 acres of parkland. In the beautiful, elegantly appointed sitting room, Caroline plays cards while Mr. Darcy pensively looks out a large window.
I have an excessive regard for Jane, and I wish with all my heart she were well settled. But with those parents and such low connections... Oh, my brother, there you are. How is the dear?
Not well. She's resting.
Poor thing. Darcy, you've been awfully quiet since that dreadful ball. Do you wish to return home to Pemberley?
No. My mind is more agreeably engaged. I have been meditating on the great pleasure which a pair of fine eyes in the face of a pretty woman can bestow.
Really? And who, may I ask, has the credit of inspiring such reflections?
Miss Elizabeth Bennet.
Elizabeth enters, muddy, disheveled, and limping.
Oh, my!
I am sorry to intrude, but I have come to see Jane. I learned this morning that she was ill.
Did you fall off your horse?
No, I walked.
Walked?
You must be a rare and loving sister to come all this way.
I thank you. May I see her?
Of course. Please, take Miss Bennet to Jane's room. And please... keep her away from the furniture. Did you see that?
Hmm? What?
Well, surely you got a glimpse of Miss Elizabeth Bennet.
Really, Caroline? And as to her appearance, I thought Miss Elizabeth looked splendid when she arrived.
Well, you observed her, Mr. Darcy, and I'm inclined to think you would not wish to see your sister exhibited so.
Certainly not. Though I must admit Miss Bennet's eyes were brightened by the exercise.
I beg your pardon, but Jane has asked that I stay with her till she improves. I don't want to be a bother to you, but...
Nonsense. We'd be delighted.
Yes! Nonsense! You must stay. I'll send a servant to your home to bring back a supply of clean clothes.
I thank you.
Carolyn is not happy. The next day, in the same room at Netherfield, Carolyn and Bingley are playing cards.
Darcy, you must join us.
I am writing to my sister. I'm sure Elizabeth will be happy to join you.
Elizabeth.
Miss Bingley?
Elizabeth! Oh, now, does it not feel infinitely better to be in clean clothes? How is your darling sister?
She's still very poorly.
Poor dear. You must join us for a game.
No, thank you. I will amuse myself with a book.
A book? Miss Eliza Bennet despises cards. She is a great reader and has no pleasure in anything else.
I am not a great reader, and I have pleasure in many things.
How is your sister, Darcy? Is she much grown since last year?
She is now about Miss Elizabeth Bennet's height.
I never met anybody who delighted me so much as Georgiana Darcy, and so accomplished for her age. Oh, Darcy, do send your sister my love.
I have already told her so once.
Such a long letter. One who writes a long letter with ease cannot write ill. My brother writes in the most careless way.
My ideas flow so rapidly that my letters sometimes convey no ideas at all.
Mr. Bingley, you are too humble.
Nothing is more deceitful than the appearance of humility.
Oh, shocking! He should be punished for such an insult. How shall we do it, Elizabeth?
Tease him. Laugh at him.
It has been the study of my life to avoid those weaknesses which expose one to ridicule.
Such as vanity and pride.
Vanity is a weakness indeed, but pride, where there is real superiority of mind, will be always under good regulation.
How astonishing to meet with someone devoid of defect.
No, I have faults enough. My temper is too little yielding. I can't forget the follies and vices of others so soon as I ought, nor their offenses against myself. My good opinion, once lost, is lost forever.
That is a failing indeed.
Well, there are natural defects in all of us, which not even the best education can overcome.
And yours is a propensity to hate everybody.
And yours is willfully to misunderstand them.
I think this is the perfect time to check on Jane.
And Mr. Darcy had much better finish his letter.
Oh, I'm so restless. I think I shall go out and stroll among the shrubbery. Elizabeth, why don't you join me? Come, Elizabeth.
Very well.
From the corner of my eye, I watched you, just as subtle as I could be. How strange, such a change has come over me. And to think at first I hardly noticed you, but then those eyes, those eyes, yes, those eyes are full of loveliness. In those eyes I see a different world. There is intelligence, wit, and wisdom, something profound. How they astound. In those eyes I see maturity, not a girl, a woman all her own. I could forget myself, lose my footing. Yes, danger lies within those eyes. In those eyes I see no rank of class. They far surpass such boundaries. And when I look at her now, I see someone not plain at all, but beautiful. beautiful, uncommonly beautiful. In those eyes, something unknown to me draws me in against my will. It's quite remarkable how one feature can alter the whole. Quite a surprise, the Lizzie I see in those... What am I thinking? I cannot forget where she comes from, her station, her family. A woman like that, Mistress of Pemberley. I should think not.
It is rather chilly outside. I thought I'd get something. Excuse me.
Yes, it's remarkable how one feature can alter the whole. Quite a surprise, the Lizzie I see in those eyes.
It is 5 days later. We're in the same room at Netherfield. Darcy again looks pensively out of the window. Carolyn paces nervously as Elizabeth enters carrying a suitcase.
Elizabeth, we can surely have our footman carry that.
Thank you, but it is really nothing. I wanted to give Mr. Bingley and Jane a moment together before we left.
How terrible that you must leave, just as we were all becoming such friends. I should go and check if your carriage is ready. Excuse me.
I hope we haven't been too much of an imposition. That must be a very good book.
It is. Elizabeth.
Yes?
I wondered if I might... that is, to say...
Oh, the carriage is coming around the front. Jane!
Are you sure you are well enough to leave?
Of course she's well enough to leave. See how the colour has returned to those lovely cheeks of hers.
I am so grateful for the attention you've shown me, but I couldn't possibly tread on your kindness a moment longer.
You see, oh, Jane, it would give me great pleasure to see you again very, very soon.
Thank you. I would be most pleased as well.
Elizabeth, all the best to you.
I am sure we will see you both very soon.
All right, enough chitter-chatter. Your carriage awaits.
Goodbye, Mr. Darcy.
Goodbye, Miss Bennet.
Back at the Bennets later that day, the family are all gathered in the sitting room.
I believe I, at least, had overstayed my welcome. Mr. Darcy was quite determined to be silent around me these last several days.
I am sure the man has nothing pleasant to say anyway. He is ate up with pride.
Pride is a very common failing, and human nature is particularly prone to it. Vanity and pride are different things, though the words are often used synonymously. Pride relates more to our opinion of ourselves. Vanity to what we would have others think of us.
Thank you, Mary. You should both know I received a letter while you were away. It is from my cousin, Mr. Collins.
Oh, I cannot bear to hear the name of that odious man, to think he will inherit this house when you die.
It is a most iniquitous affair, but he is paying us a visit. He says he's a recently ordained rector under the patronage of Lady Catherine de Bourgh and seeks to make amends. He should be here at any moment.
Lady Catherine de Bourgh is the wealthiest woman within 100 miles of here. Well, I promise to be civil to him, which is more than he deserves.
Mr. Collins.
Ah, Mr. Collins.
Mr. Bennet, a pleasure to finally make your acquaintance. And this must be Mrs. Bennet, a delight. Oh, and these must be your daughters. I have heard much of their beauty, but in this instance, fame has fallen short of the truth.
This is Kitty, Lydia, Mary, Elizabeth, and my eldest Jane.
Charming. I have no doubt of seeing them all well disposed of in marriage.
I wish it may prove so, for they will be destitute enough.
I am sensible of the hardship our delicate situation poses to my fair cousins, but I can assure the ladies that I come prepared to admire them.
Oh, dear.
What a lovely house this is, though even the grandest estate pales in comparison to the Rosings Park, where lives my patroness, the Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
Oh, you must tell us all about Lady Catherine.
No, I am extremely grateful to be the recipient of my ladyship's kindness. I have never in my life beheld such behaviour in a person of rank, such affability, such condescension.
Dinner is served.
Mrs. Bennet, a word with you, if I may. As an act of reconciliation for my unfortunate position regarding this estate, I am prepared to marry one of your daughters.
Oh, well, Mr. Collins,
Mrs. Bennet, your eldest daughter is a lovely creature.
Oh, she is, but my Jane may be very soon engaged.
Ah, and the second eldest?
Elizabeth? Well, though she's presently unattached, she can be a bit feisty. She prefers to do things her own way.
Oh, but Lady Catherine always speaks her mind, and I find it most admirable.
Well, then, you have my permission. Come, Mr. Collins.
The next day, the Bennet girls and Mr. Collins are out for a walk.
And in Lady Catherine's garden, there are over 20 species of roses, as well as...
Look, it's Mr. Denny.
Ladies, may I introduce Mr. Wickham? He's just accepted a commission in our corps.
Nice to meet you all. This is such a lovely part of the country.
I hope you will find enough to do to keep yourself entertained. It can get quite dull here, really.
I am sure I will never want for enjoyment.
Good afternoon, ladies, gentlemen. Jane, you are well?
Yes, Mr. Bingley, thank you. We were just on our way to visit our aunt.
And I was on my way to personally invite you and your family to a ball at Netherfield next Tuesday.
We will be delighted to attend. Oh, I must introduce you to Mr. Collins, our cousin.
I'm very glad to meet you. I hope you will attend as well.
I'd be most happy. There are few activities I enjoy more than dancing.
The invitation is extended to the regiment, of course.
Thank you, sir.
Well, we will be off then, Jane. Good day, everyone.
Good day.
Miss Elizabeth.
Mr. Darcy.
Mr. Wickham.
Come, Darcy.
A ball at Netherfield. Oh, let us go tell Auntie.
You must come. We are only going as far as Meryton.
Wickham! Lead the way.
We'll be right behind you.
How long has Mr. Darcy been staying at Netherfield?
About a month. I gather you know him.
Yes. Are you much acquainted with Mr. Darcy?
As much as I ever wish to be. I find him very disagreeable.
Well, we're not on friendly terms either, and it always gives me great pain to see him.
You must forgive me for asking, but what did Mr. Darcy do to cause you such pain?
He and I grew up together. Our fathers were great friends. His father promised mine that I would always be provided for, as he loved me like a son, but when he died, Darcy disregarded his wishes. He turned me out. I wished for a profession in the church, but due to the vicious lies he spread about me and his refusing to help me achieve my goal, I had no choice but to go into the military.
This is shocking. He deserves to be publicly disgraced.
Someday he will be, but come, let us not dwell on the past. It really is lovely here. Lovely hills, lovely towns, lovely people.
Well, yes, there are very nice people here.
And I just happen to be speaking to one very lovely person at this very moment.
Lovely! Well, thank you.
Lizzie!
We're coming!
We now find ourselves at the ball at Netherfield a week later. In the elegant and sumptuous ballroom, complete with tapestries and chandeliers, Mr. Bingley, Mr. Darcy, Carolyn, the Lucases, Charlotte, the Bennet family, and others are either dancing, mingling, or admiring the festivities. Mr. Wickham is nowhere to be found, but Mr. Darcy and Mr. Collins vie for Elizabeth's attention.
Miss Elizabeth! I beg your pardon, I do not believe we have met.
This is my dearest friend, Charlotte Lucas. This is our cousin, Mr. Collins.
A pleasure, Miss Lucas. The dance begins.
One moment. Jane, you must find out what you can about Mr. Wickham. I believe he's trustworthy, but I...
Elizabeth!
They dance, if you could call the awkward posings and embarrassingly clumsy footwork of Mr. Collins dancing. Elizabeth tries valiantly to keep her composure. The dance thankfully ends.
Thank you, Mr. Collins.
Elizabeth runs to Charlotte.
That was mortifying.
Excuse me, Miss Elizabeth, may I have the honor of your hand for the next dance?
Yes. Did I just agree to dance with Mr. Darcy?
You did. Perhaps this time you will find him agreeable.
Mr. Darcy, a dance is...
Excuse me, Miss Elizabeth.
Elizabeth and Darcy begin the dance. After a few moments...
The dance is not terribly lively. It is your turn to say something. I talked about the dance.
Do you talk by rule then while you are dancing?
Sometimes. If you like, we can say as little as possible.
Do you and your sisters often walk to Meryton?
Yes. When you met us there the other day, we had just been forming a new acquaintance.
Ha! Mr. Wickham is blessed with the ability to make friends. Whether he is capable of retaining them is less certain.
He has been so unlucky as to lose your friendship, and in a manner which he is likely to suffer from all his life.
Lovely! I hope to have the pleasure of seeing such dancing often repeated, perhaps at the celebration of the union of your sister and your friend.
I've forgotten what we were speaking of.
Nothing, I'm afraid. I remember you saying that your resentment, once created, was unappeasable. Are you very cautious as to its being created?
I am.
And never allow yourself to be blinded by prejudice.
I hope not. May I ask to what these questions tend?
To the illustration of your character. I'm trying to make it out.
I wish, Miss Bennet, that you would not sketch my character at this moment, as I fear the performance would reflect no credit on either of us. You will excuse me.
Lizzie, I inquired about Mr. Wickham. Mr. Bingley does not completely know the circumstances, but by his and his sister's account, Mr. Wickham is not a respectable man.
I couldn't care a bit about her account, but Mr. Bingley, he does not know Mr. Wickham himself.
No.
Then he's received this account from Mr. Darcy.
I beg your pardon. Jane, may I have this next dance?
Of course.
Lady Lucas, I expect that soon my Jane will be married to Mr. Bingley.
Really?
Yes, and such a promising thing for my other daughters, as Jane's marrying so greatly must throw them in the way of other rich men.
Mother, I fear you're being overheard by Mr. Darcy.
What is Mr. Darcy to me that I should be afraid of him?
Dinner is served.
Bingley, I must speak to you after dinner.
The next morning, in the Bennet's kitchen, Mr. Collins bursts into the room, interrupting Mrs. Bennet with Kitty and Elizabeth.
Madam, may I solicit for the honour of a private audience with your daughter Elizabeth?
Oh, dear, yes, certainly. Come, Kitty, I want you upstairs.
Don't go. Mr. Collins can have nothing to say to me that anybody need not hear. In fact, I'm going away myself.
Nonsense. You will stay and listen to Mr. Collins.
May I begin?
Yes, of course.
Permit me to declare in phrases eloquent and rare that your humility quite adds to your perfections. I assure you I've permission for this moment of petition, as your mother gave consent without objections. I vocalized my wishes as the cook was clearing dishes and the room still smelled of peppermint and bacon. I now assume your comprehension, as my burgeoning attention has been much too obvious to be mistaken. Almost as soon as I arrived, I saw I could not be deprived of your companionship for all my days eternal. So lest I lecture to excess, let me most heartily express my grounds for marrying, which I've written in this journal. First, it's often said that every clergyman should wed as an example to the people in his parish. And second, I believe that it will help me to achieve the sort of happiness that even laymen cherish. And third, I was surprised when I was expertly advised to take a wife by my most gracious noble patroness, the Lady Catherine de Bourgh.
Really, Mr. Collins?
My dear, if you will allow me to continue.
Yes.
She said the other day, betwixt her efforts at croquet, it's my opinion, Mr. Collins, you should marry. Let her be useful to a man, frugal and active. If she can, not brought up high, bring her to me, and do not tarry. She will surely find you pleasant. She may deign to serve you pheasant if you show respect and try your best to flatter. Oh, she does enjoy some brightness if it's tempered with politeness, and for now that's all I'll say upon that matter. As to why I ventured here to gain a wife should be quite clear, since you're aware that this estate I'm to inherit. When your dear father dies, although he may live many years, I know, and so by choosing from his daughters we may share it. As to fortune, I cannot and am acquainted with your lot, so there to think you'll make me rich would be short-sighted. So on that subject I'll be mute, for we'll not be quite destitute, and not one word shall pass these lips when we're united. And so I've stated well my case, and in it doubt you may erase, for now you know my motives through these bold reflections. And so, since we are here alone, I will, in animated tone, assure you of the violence of my affection.
Mr. Collins, you forget that I've made no answer. Accept my thanks for this compliment. I am very sensible of the honor of your proposal, but I'm afraid I must decline it.
I have heard that young ladies often reject the addresses of the man whom they secretly mean to accept. Therefore, when I do myself the honor of speaking to you next on the subject, I shall hope to receive a more favorable answer.
Really, Mr. Collins, how may I express my refusal so that it may convince you of its being one? You could not make me happy, and I'm convinced I'm the last woman in the world who would make you so.
My dear, you must allow me to flatter myself, for my hand is not unworthy of your acceptance. Therefore, I must deduce that you are not serious in your rejection, and shall attribute it to your wish of increasing my love by suspense.
Sir, I take no delight in tormenting a respectable man. I thank you again and again for the honor you have done me, but to accept your proposal is absolutely impossible. My feelings in every respect forbid it. Can I speak plainer?
You have now only further encouraged my suit.
The next day, just when all seemed resolved...
I'm leaving with the regiment to Brighton in 3 days, and then I'll be marrying Mary King. We've only known each other 5 days, but...
Her grandfather recently passed away and left her £10,000.
And then...
Mr. Collins, I'm very sorry that things did not work out as you planned during your stay.
Must not be sorry, for only a few hours ago I received the warmest acceptance of my offer of marriage from Elizabeth's dearest friend, Charlotte Lucas.
Engaged to Mr. Collins?
Oh, dear, I wanted to tell you myself.
And the final blow...
I've just received a letter from Caroline Bingley. She says they have all left Netherfield for London. Well, it is perfectly clear. She does not wish me to be her sister-in-law.
Jane! Oh, I cannot believe this! I wish the lot of you would just go away forever. But then you have, haven't you?
Mr. Wickham, with your charming ways and sweet words, which turn to naught when money calls. Mr. Collins, with your foolish behavior, annoying voice, not to mention the fact that you lured my best friend into a miserable life. Mr. Bingley, with your likable disposition, but complete lack of backbone. Mr. Darcy, with your arrogant, know-it-all, condescending, mean-spirited ways. Goodbye. Good day. Good riddance. Pack your bags on your way. We shall not meet again, I pray. And if you think of us one day, try to forget we ever met. Shed a tear, knowing you will not be near. We shall return to normal here, that you can bet. Oh, you can bet. You've done enough damage already. You've caused enough anger and pain. We all
away, like, I don't know, Spain? Good riddance. Now that you're all out of sight, please don't feel you have to write. I don't say this out of spite. All right, I lied. Good night. Good day. Only aim is a husband, and this is all that we have got to pick from. Then I'll be fine on my own. I would rather be alone, and just the thought of a life with men like these is enough to get sick from. Good riddance. From this day on, I swear I'll remain single. I don't care that my sisters grin and bear their awful lot. Another dear, I cannot be. And if love is something I shall never find, well, I'd rather that than lose my mind. So to love and men and marriage again, I say, good day, good day.
Thus ends episode the first. True, all may seem resolved, but high drama, many surprises, and more than a few laughs await you. Can Darcy ever truly forget Elizabeth? And will he ever rise above his pride to perhaps find some happiness in his life? Will Jane ever see her Mr. Bingley again? And will Elizabeth accept the truth about the people she hates to love and loves to hate? Or will she continue to be blinded by her prejudice? Please join us soon for episode the second of Pride and Prejudice, the musical.
In the cast, you heard Maddie Trumbull, Ron Bomer, Georgia Osborne, Gordon Stanley, Amy Justman, Lucy Sorensen, Jennifer Newberry, Brian Ray Norris, Sasha Weiss, Billy Tai, Mike Cefalo, Autumn Hurlburt, Kristen Maloney, Nora May Ling, Susan Lewis Friedman, Jules Price, Conrad Osborne, and the narrator was Paul Hecht. Technical directors were William N. Lowe and Olivia Giordano. Orchestrations were by Matt Castle and Frank Galgano. The director was Gabriel Barry. Pride and Prejudice was produced for audio stages by Tim Jerome. Tune in next Saturday at 7 for part 2 of Pride and Prejudice by Lawrence Rush. Good night.